Hello and welcome to You Don't Know Lit. My name is Nick Argyris, and this week I'm looking for the best book name, Lock and Key. To help me are two high school English teachers, Ian and Joe.
Hi, Nick. My name is Joe Holshue. I'm a high school English teacher. I have a little bit of a problem, though. You asked for the best book named Lock and Key. I brought a graphic novel. Does that count? I know Ian's thoughts on this. Ian thinks that there is no limitation to what a book can be.
Everybody just like turned off the episode.
Intricately crafted tattoo could be a book, according to Ian. But Nick, does a graphic novel count?
We've had this conversation before.
Okay. And hey, lit heads are not completionists.
My name is Dr. Andy Young, and this week I brought a Netflix show called Lock and Key. So I guess I'm going to lose.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
One of the joys of this, of doing this show, is I get so exhausted by like media culture. Like, you can't keep up on all of this. I read this not knowing that it was a Netflix show, but of course it's a freaking Netflix show. Yeah. Because everything is a Netflix show.
Did you guys know that You Don't Know That podcast.com is a Netflix show?
Well, we're getting adapted.com.
Army Hammer plays Nick.
Specifically requested Army Hammer play.
I think it was in my contract. He's an avid fan of the show, and he came to the producers, Harvey Weinstein and others, and said,
and the gang.
I feel I'm perfect for Nick.
Okay, Lock and Key. Lock spelled not in the traditional way, Joe. We got an E on the end, and I'm getting a real house vibe, like a real like primetime CBS show where the guy's name is in the title, and he goes, "I guess this is my house," and his name is House, and then he's builds a house.
Right. Well, we can get into it. And also, it's a pretty apt comparison because there is a house in this book.
Oh,
it's kind of like
spoilers.
This central thing. There is a house in this book.
Is the character House in it?
No, it's actually Dr. House. He shows up with his pills and his cane.
Sir Mr. House?
Follow-up question.
Mm-hmm.
Is Key and Peele in this?
Oh, good question. Lock and Key and House and Peele.
Lock and Key. And
there's so many crossover opportunities here. And this is also a series, Joe, because you're not just going to make one.
I do feel like unless you're Art Spiegelman, you're not going to ever just or that guy
Spiegelman.
Who worships wishes. Spiegelman. Who's that guy who worships wishes that did The Watchmen? Alan Moore.
Alan Moore.
Right.
So he doesn't worship wishes. He worships a snake god. He is a witch. Anyway, the point is,
snake god.
You're not going to just publish one graphic novel. That's kind of like, you don't do that. You publish one, and then it's volume one, and then you have 18 more, and by the time you're done, you've ruined your legacy.
This was, like so many things, that always meant to be a contained graphic novel. This was always meant to be a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and they stopped it after a couple of years. Like, they told their story a la, not House, but a la maybe something like Breaking Bad, where it's like, oh, we know how this begins, we know how this ends, we're going to get there, and then we're going to move on to other projects.
Yeah, that's comforting. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome, Lit Heads, to You Don't Know Lit, a weekly, or as we call it, strongly podcast, where every week we typically bring two book recommendations and a big old wacky theme to go along with it. and we have some rules that don't make any sense. Joe, tell us what this book or this book series is about. I'm assuming you read the first one. Did you just pick a center cut?
No, I read the first.
Wasn't there a dragon?
The one that was in my high school's library.
Wasn't there a dragon book a long time ago that Joe is like, I read the first of 182 books.
No, you guys had to bring two books back to back once. You each brought one of the books in the series, and one of you had to read the second book.
That was actually amazing. That was our Patrick Rothfuss episode, Name of the Wind and The Wind of the Door, or whatever. Good time.
You're like, I didn't like it.
I don't know what was going on. I think the second book won because Nick has no morals.
All right, Nick. Stop me if you heard.
You can't see, but Nick is cracking himself up like nobody's business over here. It's a good time.
Go ahead. Nick, okay, Joe.
Yes. I'm ready.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Nick, stop me if you've heard this one. This is a book with a great big spooky house. It's set in a small, quiet New England town. The opening scene is a gruesome murder by a pair of deranged delinquents. And as the book unfolds, it becomes apparent that the house contains much, much more than it seemed at first. Like paranormally. I know what you're thinking. Joe brought a Stephen King novel. I met him in Maine. I bet it's 1,000 pages long. Nick, you would be wrong. I brought a short book that is also a comic by a man named Joe Hill. That man is Stephen King's son. Oh. This week, I brought a Lithead recommendation from Rebecca White, books written by children of famous authors. This is a graphic novel called Lock and Key, and it is quite good.
We tried to do this theme in the past, and then we failed, I think.
Pretty badly, actually. Mm-hmm. Joe, I'd like to give you some notes.
Yes.
I think this would have been way better if you had revealed that Joe Hill is Stephen King's boy at the very end of the episode.
Oh, well, I think we should get right into it. Joe King.
Joe King.
I'm sorry. Joe Hill. Joe Hillstrom King.
Hillstrom. Why did you say it like that? Is he from Transylvania?
It's got an umlaut in the last name. What? Like it's
in
like
Hill?
H-I-L-L-S-T-R.
Oh my God. He looks just like him.
Okay. Stop spoiling it.
Oh my God. This guy is 22-year-old Stephen King with.
That was more or less what Joe told me when he texted me this week.
So
this is so weird.
It is wild. And
down to the glasses.
Down to the glasses. Oh, okay. I think there is an element here of him leaning into it a little bit. Like, he's got the glasses. He's got the swoopy haircut. Like, it's like, oh, you could look less like Stephen King if you wanted to.
If somebody told me Stephen King, through his dark arts and his cunning, cloned himself into this person to continue his career.
Through a door in the back of a diner.
Through a door in this basement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 11-22-63. Good pull, Joe. Yes,
yeah. I would believe it. This is so weird.
100%. So there's a beautiful backstory with this that I love. Joe Hill grows up as the oldest son of the most successful writer of like all time, right? Grows up as his son, grows up in the spooky New England town. We all know Stephen King. He wants to be a writer, right? Like, he grows up in this craft. His dad is a writer. His mother is a published author who's written several books herself. He's like, I want to be a writer. I can't imagine anything else.
Great.
However, I don't want to be Stephen King's son, the writer. At about 25 years old, he starts doing like the grind. Like, he's writing short stories. He's sending them to magazines. He's trying to get published. He's writing book manuscripts. Yeah. He's getting rejected under the name Joe Hill. It takes him about 10 years, right? He works as a writer during that time. He actually starts working, writing for comic books, things like that. The whole time, like, shopping these novels. And finally, he gets a publisher to agree to bundle four of his short stories and sell them, right? Put four of these short stories in a novel and sell them. Then he has to go out on press tour, right? He starts going in front of rooms to do readings and Q&As. And people are like, this guy that writes these stories.
Why is young Stephen King here?
Do you see it?
Is there a door in the basement?
He looks a lot like Stephen King, right? And basically the second anybody saw this guy as a writer, they were like, oh, well, okay, well, that's Stephen King's son. Like, that's definitely Stephen King or alternate dimension Stephen King.
I have to question this a little bit. I mean, I'm sure that happened in the very, very, very beginning. But, I mean, these publishers, they know.
Yeah.
Don't you think they know?
Okay, but at one point do they know, right? Because, like, getting rejected for 10 years, I have a hard time believing that a child of Stephen King would get rejected for 10 years.
Oh, if anybody knew at all, right? Like, if anybody knew at all, it would be like, okay. Oh,
yeah. Sorry, I thought you were saying any. I thought you were saying any new author at all getting rejected for 10 years.
No, was like,
no. Yeah, like if this is going to get out.
Looking strange. At his body of work, I mean, it looks like just a lot of real crap, right? I mean, it is just real.
Joe Hill, come on the show. Defend yourself against Nick's violent hatred of your...
I think that's how you start.
Yeah, right. Like, he writes in the horror genre.
You just gotta start writing. And, yeah, I think it's cool.
It is cool. And he writes, like, I think this is doubled... It's further complicated by the fact that he writes in kind of a pulpy genre, right? Mm. Like, when we think of horror, when we think of thriller, when we think of suspense, we don't think of high art. You know, yeah. We don't think of like literary merit.
When you're writing like literary fiction or literary work, and you have a clunker, it's either a misfire or it's like people don't understand it. You have to really clunk hard to clunk in the literary genre. Sure.
Yeah,
you but clunk, if you're clunk if right. you're writing. If you're writing in a more pulpy and more kind of genre type genre, yeah. If you write a clunker, people are like, oh yeah, whatever, and you move on.
All right. So what's the book about, Joe?
Does the guy live in Maine? Hey, is he in Maine?
Well, it's a fictional town called Lovecraft.
Oh.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Fictional town called Lovecraft. This sounds more heavy handed than it is.
Is it in Maine though?
Not a good start.
It's definitely in the New England.
The Maineverse. Okay.
It's in the Maineverse. So yeah, Lock and Key, a New England mansion, right? Filled with impossible keys. Like I said, this book opens up with a murder, right? Like a pretty gruesome murder. And the family of the murdered man, the murdered dad, moves across the country. They're living kind of a happy life in Oregon. They move across the country to the ancestral home of the dad that just got killed. His brother is living there. He's willing to take them in.
By choice?
By choice. Like, they need somewhere to go.
Yeah, gotta live somewhere.
Family reaches out.
I call the murder room.
That ancestral home is a great big spooky mansion that has a name. It's called the Key House, right?
The Key House. K-E-Y. Okay.
It's called the Key House. And it's big. It's spooky. It's gothic.
Who owns this house? Why? Whose house is this? Why is it called the Key House?
It's the brother's house, whose last name would also... I'm sorry. Yeah, it's called the Key House. One second.
It's called the Key House.
It's called the Key House. I was thinking it was the Lock House.
Don't let Nick throw you off your game.
I know. Stop it, Nick.
Stop it, Nick.
I'm not trying to.
And like I said, it's the... well, sometimes the questions throw me off.
Whoa, I didn't know there'd be any questions.
And it's the ancestral home. So, like, the family still lives there. The brother still lives there.
So, this is a graphic novel that I assume took you... I don't know, couple hours to read?
An hour of sitting down, yeah.
And is this, who is this for? Not like if you like graphic novels, but like, what age do you think this is coming in at?
Well, I super liked it, and I'm 40, so...
Okay, so 40.
I think I pulled this from our high school library shelves. I looked up Joe Hill, saw that he was in the high school library, I thought, great. I think this is great for a high school student. Yep, but 15 to 40 is perfect.
But you mentioned violent murders, so I'm assuming this is like... pretty so intense.
Not like 10. Yeah, this is one of the cool things about
15
this book
is when you can start experiencing violent murders.
Violent murder at 15. It's something that I've never really liked. I never liked scary movies growing up. I don't like scary books, right? One of the reasons I never read a Stephen King book until this show is because I was like, oh, Stephen King, that's the spooky, scary guy. And I don't really like spooky, scary stuff.
Right, because they give you bad dreams.
They give you bad dreams. You start imagining. They distress you with dark imaginings. When I read this, though, I was really tickled, really pleased. Maybe not tickled. I was really pleased to see, like, how romantic of a genre horror could be.
It's got it all.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of wild because, like, when I think of horror, I think of, like, the teen slasher films, right? Like, I think of, like, one-dimensional characters.
Yes. 4, 5, and 6.
Or else I think of, like, gruesome films, like the Saw movies, where it's, like, maybe,
Saw, one,
I don't know if you
two.
Call it, like, body horror or something
body
like that.
Body horror,
like,
sure.
Yeah. Like, that's what I think of when I think of horror. Joe Hill, in one of the many interviews that this man does, you cannot be a Joe Hill interview completionist. This man promotes his work.
Okay.
In one of the many interviews he does, he talks about, like, when he was growing up, like, horror was slasher film. Like, horror was one-dimensional characters. Like, he's the jock, he's the nerd, she's the slut, right? And, like, they are going to be punished for their transgressions throughout this film.
Or he's the slut.
Well, oh, yeah? Fair. And he says that one of the weird things about that genre is, like, you find yourself rooting for Freddy Krueger because he's the only character with any dimensionality in the film at all, right?
Yeah. He's a go-getter. He never stops. Rise and grind. The grinding, though, is little kids' faces.
He's a true proponent of the American dream.
There's definitely paranormal in here. Like, there's a paranormal element. There is a girl that lives in a well on the property that seems to be able to kind of speak to you and, like, summon you and stuff like
that. That doesn't seem like paranormal. That just sounds like straight up homelessness.
But she's been living there since 1980. Like, without sustenance is, like, one of the things that makes it paranormal.
Okay. Well, you know, homelessness is, it's been around a while.
Sure. Right.
Is she a vagrant?
There are keys. There are doors in this house. Like, really, like, the central paranormal element is there are doors in this house, each one with a unique key. And when you walk through these doors, something happens to you, right? So, for example, the first one that we encounter is one of the young boys, one of the children that moves to this house, goes through this door in the backyard or into the backyard. And when you go through this door, you die.
Oh,
like,
your body
collapses. What? You become a ghost, but as a ghost, you have kind of ghostly powers. You can move around through walls. You can listen in on conversations. You can go places just by thinking of them, etc. And then,
we know the ghost rules, Joe.
You know the ghost rules. And then when you want to stop being a ghost, it goes against being a ghost. You go back through the door and you go back into your body and you are then alive.
So basically this is less about, like, sort of a long-term paranormal storyline and more about what if you had the powers of
chapter blank. Book.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, what if you had the powers of blank? And one of the cool kind of conceits, one of the cool kind of, like, paranormal, like, devices here is each one of those doors does something a little bit different. Each one of those keys does something a little bit different. So there's a key, for example, that allows you to, like, unlock people's heads and see what's going on inside of them, like, see their thoughts in a visual representation.
Sweet.
Which, what a cool, like, marriage of craft and structure for a comic book.
So what's the book where they had to stay in the house for the night?
Haunting at Hill House.
Haunting at Hill House. That's the famous haunted house. House one, right? All right. You walk through that door and your body collapses in on itself and you become a ghost.
Yep.
Are you leaving that house or are you going into another door?
As a ghost.
As yourself.
Oh,
because
I
think I'm leaving pretty quickly. If that was me.
Well, one of the great things about this is the one who's, like, discovering the house is the kid. It's like the 7-year-old kid, 8-year-old kid. So when he goes through the door and becomes a ghost, he's not horrified by it. He thinks it's kind of a neat adventure.
Right. It's normal. You would think it was cool. You'd be like, this is great.
Exactly. So he's the one that kind of pokes at the edges of this house. He's the one that does the exploring in here. And it's kind of great because when he tells the other people, like, he tells his brother and sister, there's a door that I went through and I died and I became a ghost. They, of course, think he's ridiculous.
Taken to the psychiatrist.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is just kid stuff. This is imagination stuff. This is a kid whose dad just died who's, like, living in a
trauma.
Big spooky house.
You bet.
So to circle all the way back to my point about this is not slasher fiction, this is not body gore, one of the beautiful things about this book that I thought was so, so, so well done is the characters in this book are awesome. They are three-dimensional. They are complex. There's an interview that Joe Hill does along with Gabriel Rodriguez, who is the artist on this comic book. And Joe Hill says, like, hey, this is a book about a spooky house. There's these doors. Like, ultimately, there's like this secret key that everybody's looking for. And there's something like really bad on the other side of this door, right? Like this menace on the other side. And Gabe Rodriguez chimes in and he says, well, yeah, but it's also a story about growing. Like, about discovering death, about leaving childhood behind, about shaping yourself. It's about secrets and guilt and love and friendship and empty people who become enraged because they can't, like, deal with their pain. Like, and one of the great things about this book, like, the trick it pulls off so well is it's definitely about both those things. And while that cool paranormal stuff is there, that, like, human family trauma-y, like, fear stuff is like the actual story that keeps you moving through this, which for a book with a bunch of pictures is pretty impressive. A lot of them have had some critical acclaim, right? Like, he won the Bram Stoker Award for his debut novel. His second novel, Horns, was made into a film starring Daniel Radcliffe, right? The fan reviews of them, though, are really up and down, right? Like, people are like, oh, Horns is amazing. It's awesome. Heart-Shaped Box, his first novel, feels kind of like a first novel. He also, I mean, can't be helped but be compared to Stephen King, right? Sure. Like yep. Everybody, a lot of the conversation around him is just, hey, would we know what his name was if his dad's name wasn't Stephen King?
Right.
And the answer kind of seems to be like, certainly not to the degree that we do now.
Right.
Joe, welcome to Tiffany's A Safe Place. Anything you didn't like about this book?
This is a graphic novel. I thought some of the characters were kind of hard to tell apart, right? Like
that's,
sometimes
that's
I
bad.
Yeah, like one of like there's a main girl. There's a main girl in the book, like one of the daughters of
Could
the dad.
Could this be a vision
shot.
Issue, though?
I do wear glasses.
You do wear glasses.
One of the main girls, though, like one of the main characters, there was a couple, she changes her appearance throughout the book in a way that I actually thought was kind of hard to track as a reader. Like, if you miss a panel, you are like, oh, wait, who is this person now? And then there were like two other characters that showed up that I thought might be that girl that I actually had to go back and figure out that they weren't. So I didn't love that, but...
Sounds like a reader error, though. I don't know if this is good criticism here.
The visual equivalent of the Russian novels where someone has like eight different names. And you're like,
yeah.
Wait, is Pyotr the same as Ilyochka?
It's like, well, this girl shows up five different ways. And by the way, there's quite a few flashbacks in this novel. So she doesn't always look like what you would expect.
Right.
Okay, so you got to pay attention in this one.
Got to pay attention. It.
Joe, do you ever read any more horror? Has this changed you? Are you a changed man?
I still, like, if you ask me if I like horror, I'd still like, no, not really. Like, not particularly, right? However, I've now read a couple of Stephen King books for this show. I've now read this Joe Hill novel, this Joe Hill graphic novel. And I thought they were all kind of great, right? Like, so I don't know if I'm a horror fan, but I think I'm a King fan.
Right on. Well, and Stephen doesn't necessarily, like, I think Stephen is...
You mean a Hill fan?
Well, Hill King. King of the Hill
Stephen
fan.
Is kind of synonymous with horror, but he does not do straight horror. Like, some of his books are, but a lot of them are kind of genre-bending, genre-blending. I think that if he had started out slightly differently, like if he hadn't started out with Carrie, for instance, he could have been a perfectly respectable science fiction author, because he likes sci-fi stuff a lot. Litheads, if you would like to reap the benefits of being a Nepo baby, just start by having a rich parent and you're good to go from there.
Like we did.
if you, yeah, and like, we don't truly need your support, but we want it because we're narcissists. So please check out all of our social media, but especially TikTok, because it's the only one where we're active.
Link in the bio.
Links in bio. You can scope out our website, www.tweenvogue.com. You can request stickers there to put on your water bottles and laptops and gas stations. You can tell us to read books like this happened this week where, who is it?
Tabitha King Rebecca. Is his wife's name. Rebecca White.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, Joe. Yeah, Rebecca White told us to read this book, and we sure did, or at least Joe did. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, tell a bookish friend. Congratulations to Keese. Congratulations to Peels. Congratulations, Joe.
Beautiful. All right. This is a quote from an interview, because, of course, the comic itself is a little bit hard to quote. And interviewer points out that Joe Hill writes kind of badass women in his books. And they're
cool.
Like,
okay.
They're like, where does that come from? And Joe Hill says, I have a tendency throughout my life to find certain creators who I fall in love with and reverse engineer their work. As a kid, I loved James Cameron. One thing that marks a lot of Cameron's sense is creating smart, tough female leads, characters who are easy to love, but sometimes difficult to like. Also, my mom is the first reader of all of my work, and that helps. And the interviewer says, she's a writer too, right? And he says, yeah, Tabitha King is a really successful writer in her own right. She's written about small town Maine successfully with great insight. She comes from a big Maine family, the Spruce family, and she has five sisters. Those aunts were a big part of my life. They're all fierce Scrabble players and fiercely opinionated about politics, fiction, education, and a lot of my childhood was spent sitting under the kitchen table where the Spruce family sat around drinking coffee late into the night and bitterly arguing politics and literature. So a lot of my sense from femaleness comes from this collection of two-fisted, white-knuckled Maine women that I grew up with.
That's awesome. I love that he's like straight up about, yeah, I just do fanfic. I know he's not saying that, but I think that's really cool.
Oh, no, 100%. And he said in some other interview that I read, he was like, when I read a short story like that absolutely stops me in my tracks, right, that sticks me to the spot, I find myself reading it three times. The first time, I read it for the story. Once I realize it hit me, the second time, I read it for, you know, like the stuff that I missed. And then the third time, I try to like diagram it. Like, I try to figure out how it worked, like structurally, what did this thing do? He really does come across as a bit like a guy who has learned his craft.
That's awesome.